Well, one of the great parallels of the way we live now and the way Trollope lived then, it could certainly be seen to be the run for parliament, run for election, if you want to make it more universal, between Melmoth, and certain parallels that we cannot help but make in this day and age to the run for election of Mr. Donald J. Trump. There is a kind of, shall we say, difficulty within the Conservative Party when they attempt to rein in their renegade man running for office. Nobody seems to make Mr. Melmoth say the right things, be able to make him say the right things, and they can't find the right person to come to him who will be influential enough to modify his behavior. Does that remind you of anything? At one point, there's a person who is sent to Mr. Melmoth, for example, and they plead with him. They said, well, now please, please, please make him modify his message. And this man says, well, I don't think anyone can do that. I don't think you could do that if you held him down and pummeled him to the floor.
Yep. And I think it's great that we're talking about Melmoth and Trump now, because a few years ago, this novel became more, even more well-known because of all the parallels between Melmoth and Bernie Madoff. So it turns out now that we have another scamp or whatever word you want to use. Also, Melmoth doesn't pay his bills the way, as we've learned, Trump doesn't. He puts people off.
It's the appearance of being rich more than the reality of being rich. For Melmoth, Madoff, and Trump, it's that people see that they're rich. And Melmoth comes undone because he does everything at once. He wants the parliament and to marry off his daughter. And he wants to buy the Longstaff property, Caversham, and to have all those things at once in the same season. And that's what undoes him. Don't you love, you said there wasn't much humor in the book, but don't you love his maiden speech in Parliament? Right. How that goes? That's incredible. Embarrassment. Fiasco.
Right.
I know that man doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, because he wants to speak. He doesn't, when he first goes to Parliament, he's so ignorant of the ways of Parliament.
Keep
that
your
he
hat
just
on,
wants
take
to
your
jump
hat
right
off.
Up and just
my
get right in
colleague.
There. Yeah, but and
that he doesn't know to say the right honorable gentleman,
well,
Mr. Speaker,
right.
The right honorable gentleman from wherever.
But,
that,
but
yeah.
like Trump, he doesn't know what he doesn't know. I mean, most people would recognize, okay, I'm new at this. I got to learn the ways. I got to learn things, and you know, I'll get up to speed eventually. But Melmoth just plunges right in there. He just, you know, he knows better than anybody else. That people don't have to tell him anything. He knows. And yes, there is quite a parallel there.
Does Melmoth have any political convictions? Does he have any political views? Is there any reason? Is it just accident that has him stand for the Tories? I mean, he knows money, or he thinks he knows money, or he wants to be seen as somebody who has a lot of money, but is he actually a political creature? I mean, this is somebody who at his peak operates in so many worlds. Financial, social. I mean, again, another, I think, hilarious episode is when he's entertaining the Emperor of China. Very funny episode. But that's a social and, you know.
So you're saying this book is funnier than I've given it credit
for?
Well, I think it is a great deal of bitter and, shall we say, schadenfreude kind of humor.
Exactly. It's maybe a different kind of humor.
Yeah.
But where is Melmoth's center? Where does he want to? I mean,
well,
it's kind of the same question about Trump.
It's quite immaterial.
Yeah.
Quite immaterial which party shall woo him first and get him to stand. And someone, I think Trollope, of course, is the man behind the scenes saying that had things gone a different way and had someone gotten to him before the particular man who wooed him into the running for the Westminster seat from the Conservative side. He could perfectly well have been getting up on the other side of the bench.
And I think the same, I contend, is could be said for Trump. He came to political prominence with the birther issue with President Obama. If there had been a Republican president at the time and Trump was itching to get in there, mm-hmm. I think he would have made something up with that president. Mm-hmm. And Trump very well could just as easily have run as a Democrat as he could have as
or
a
done a Ross Perot kind
yeah,
of taking
or,
the Republican
or run
voters.
As a Democrat.
Yeah,
I mean, there's nothing about his previous positions on issues that would have precluded him running as a Democrat. But, you know, the birther issue worked really well for him, and then he went from there.
And it's somewhat ironic because one could do a birther issue with Melmoth, and
yes.
of course people do. Where does this guy
right.
come from? Is
right.
he Irish? Is he Jewish? Is he German?
Well,
I mean, wherever he's from, and wherever he's from, it's not something that's going to make him electorally promising in London in the mid-Victorian era. Whether he's Irish, Jewish, German, wherever there's a birther issue.
I think Melmoth, like Trump, lacks an inner life, well, like Felix in this book also, but, you know, he's very busy, he's always doing things, he's had a certain amount of success, he's also had a lot of failure too, but he's always moving on, and he's not somebody who's sitting there reflecting on his beliefs and what his life means. I will say for Melmoth that it's very surprising, and yet I think it works really well, is that his final scenes, he does achieve a certain level of, I don't want to say, dignity, maybe?
Pathos.
I mean, there is something a little bit honorable, I don't know if that's the word, but something we can respect a little bit in the way that he just tries to maintain his dignity, goes about his business. He kills himself.
I think it achieves pathos rather than anything else.
Do you think he's not a total villain by the end?
I was going to ask, is he a villain? I was going to ask.
Oh,
not a total.
No, I think not. And Marie Melmoth is the spokesperson for that. She comes forward, and she has more reason to feel abused by him than many, or as much reason as many, and she makes some points in his defense in the late volumes that speak for, I think, Trollope's idea that not entirely without reasons to be sympathized with.
Yeah, so he gets a little bit of redemption. Lady Carberry certainly does. It's really
Roger
well,
a bit, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, Roger's
mostly.
I think, a positive character. But yeah.
And you kind of feel sorry for him.
Felix is the one
he's
just, from start to finish, he's just bad, bad, bad. It's interesting that that's not the case with Melmoth.
Let's say that there is some sense in which when he has one thing going for him, his beauty, and that's that's taken from him in his beating up by John Crumb, and good God, there he goes to the Bear Garden. By the way, how beautiful a metaphor is Bear Garden. Mm-hmm. Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah.
This is the place where all of the masks are stripped away, and these aristocrats are seen in their ignoble truth, not paying their bills, not owning up to their IOUs, not being in any sense of the idea of the British code of honor any worthy examples of it. And there they are, and the place goes bust, And that's the way.
But although in it revives in the Duke's Children.
Well,
it,
they need them, don't they?
Yeah. And it,
they
it's actually, you know, not such a bad place in the Duke's Children, which is interesting.
It
gets redeemed
It serves a necessary purpose.
Yeah.
And that you see a little of that at the very end, but it's not, shall we say, a very happy revival.
I thought several times during my reading that this novel could almost fit into the Palliser world with the parliamentary focus, and you mentioned Mr. Emilius and so on, but he chose not to put it in that
mm-hmm.
world. But there are, even though the mood is very different, there are some.
Dolly Longstaff becomes a major character in The Duke's Children.
Exactly.
And he wrote it in the middle of the
mm-hmm.
Of writing the Palliser
mm-hmm.
Series.
I think he's unfettered in a way that maybe Mr. Gopnik, who said, you know, that he didn't particularly like this novel, didn't like. But I love this unfettered bitterness, the ability to cut a wide swath across everything that he sees wrong in this picture. And he's just letting himself go in ways that perhaps his artistic idea of balance and it's an interesting journalistic question. Do we want really to say everything that's awful and truthful, or must we always adhere to some kind of, well, on the one hand this and on the other hand that balance?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think he's allowing himself a lot of a wider swath in this novel than he does in his Palliser's.
Yeah, so you're referring to Adam Gopnik's article that was in The New Yorker a year and a half ago, which is a wonderful article.
Oh, I loved
Crawl
it that he
relevance.
Was bringing
but he says
to the fore.
The
yeah.
way we live now.
Not his favorite.
Is not, well, not only, he says it's the Trollope novel that people who don't like Trollope like.
Wasn't that the subtitle of the article, though? Wasn't the article Anthony Trollope and The Way We Live Now? So that if not him, then the editor, whoever edited that, put that in to appeal to people. So there's something there. I wanted to ask you guys, is it the way we live now? Is it the way we live now? The way we live now? The way? I mean, what word are we supposed to emphasize, and does that make a difference?
I would juxtapose way and now. That is, we have here the way it was and the way it is now, and we cannot not look at now without looking at the way it was then. So we have there is no possible way to divorce the two parts of that phrase from one another, it seems to me.
I am especially intrigued with the word we. Who is we? I mean, Gopnik in his article talks about a certain sourness about how the outsider comes in and corrupts English society. And, you know, he makes a point that he doesn't consider it racist, as some do. But, you know, Melmotte and then the American Hamilton Fisker, is his name?
Fisker, yeah.
Yeah. I think...
And that's almost an allusion to Hamilton Fish, who was
right.
the U.S. Secretary of
right.
State. That's almost a very direct
right.
kind of Romanic
right.
play or whatever. Yeah.
I think in the book, we means we've allowed this to happen. It's almost, you know, again, to go back to the Trump... connection, parallel. It's easy to just sort of blame Trump. He's just, you know, he came out of nowhere and look what he says and does. Look how bad he is. But what have we done to create the conditions that allow somebody like Trump to get as far as he has done? If Melmotte has been such a success or has gotten so far, despite his background, despite being known to be corrupt, everybody knows he is. That's not a secret. You know, we have allowed it. We have paved the way. So Trollope is pointing the finger and asking us, what do we do to get out of this? And I think, you know, part of his answer is you know, like a bit of honesty, maybe. And I think that Lady Carberry, her redemption at the end, the fact that she is not only married, but she's married in an honest relationship with a man, I think helps to point the way toward